2 on and along 2nd Avenue in Plaza de Way. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTD HD, Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin, at 91.1 on your FM dial, and 101.7 in Elkhorn, and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. WGTD is a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Network. I'm very pleased to welcome Dr. Lolly Hawes, superintendent of the Racine Unified School District, as my guest this morning. We will be discussing recent developments in Racine Unified, including what is officially called the Opportunity Schools Partnership Program, OSPP, I guess for short. Welcome, Dr. Hawes.
Well, thank you. Good morning, and welcome to. Thank you for having me today. And
you're most welcome. As a member of the public, I attended a special school board meeting last week in which a consultant from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction shared the specific requirements of this OSPP program with the Racine Unified School Board and administration. Before we get to this, let's talk about some new facilities in Unified. Last Sunday, you had a commentary in the Racine Journal Times describing the importance of having the needed resources to educate Unified students. Then you went on to describe some facility improvements for this coming school year. So tell us a little bit about what you shared in that, because I thought it was most interesting.
Oh, good. Yes, the commentary was about the work we've been doing. Really, budget planning starts in November every year for a school district. And so what's in this budget that the board will vote on in October, I was making a strong point that the decisions of what we put in the budget this year were very student-centered. We know we have things that our students need, that our teachers need in order to be more successful, and we know that we have a lot of work to do to improve. So some things that we have in place this year that we're happy about is that we're continuing to expand the number of full-day four-year-old kindergarten classrooms, especially for children in poverty, because we know that when they have a full-day 4K experience, they're twice as likely to be ready for kindergarten. We're also adding gifted teachers for all of our schools rather than just having one gifted school. For students, we have gifted teachers now going to every school. We have two more mental health clinics. We're up to six now. A few years ago, we didn't have any. So our mental health clinics are actually therapists in our high-poverty elementary schools that work with the children and families who are under severe emotional stress or mental illness. So that really helps with behavior and helps our teachers cope with children who are in really some traumatic situations. We also know that we want our teachers and expect our teachers to use technology more and more, so we've put in place six people that will spread out across all the schools to help teachers improve and learn and get better and better at using technology as part of learning. It never will take over learning all the way, but certainly it's part of life as
yes.
children know it today. We also, it's an expensive thing to keep our class sizes lower, but we also know that lower class size helps teachers do a better job with the children they teach. So we've spent the extra money to keep enough teachers in place to keep our class sizes at what I believe is a very reasonable rate. We've cut class size over the last 3 years by one student per year. Used to be, for example, a fifth grade class might be as high as 30 students. Now that's down to more like 26 or 27. And actually, almost all of our schools are even less than that. So
wonderful.
We're keeping our class sizes low. We have had a situation where we have lots of social workers and counselors in our schools, but some schools didn't have a social worker or counselor there every day. So mostly had them 3 days or 4 days, but not that fifth day. So we put enough social workers and counselor positions in place to make sure that every school, every day has a social worker or counselor there in case there is a major problem with a student or a family. And we've also, we're very excited about our virtual learning school. We have a virtual school now on Northwestern Avenue. We've invested a lot in thousands of students actually taking online classes, and actually now they can take they can get their high school diploma virtually. They never have to go to school at all, and they can attend our virtual school. This is great for families who might be thinking about homeschooling or for whom their child is very ill or has other issues. They can sign up for a virtual school and get their high school diploma. So that has opened this year, and we're really excited about that new venture. We've spent several million dollars on the best, the most effective, based on all the research we could find, English reading and writing curriculum, and lots of time and money for teachers to get the kind of training to implement that curriculum. And we know that that will certainly impact better reading for our children and emphasize writing more, because the tests nowadays require students to write more than they used to. So that's another big push. We've also got a new English or music curriculum. We've got this wonderful Megatronics lab at Park High School, which was a donation from the Emerson Foundation, which is sponsored through InSinkErator. So our students, like, it's a robotics lab, so it's manufacturing with robots, and it's learning to program those robotic tools. So that's exciting. We have an aviation pathway at Horlick this year, so we actually have an airplane in a hangar across the road at Batten Field, and we have a group of students who are taking classes to learn to be aviation mechanics. So we've got automotive at Park and aviation at Horlick, and we're hoping to put diesel at Case in the next few years. So we'll have lots of opportunities for students who want to go into those careers. We're building, we've spent several million dollars on Horlick right now. We're redoing all those science labs so that the science courses they take can integrate the technology and the microscopes and the tools and the equipment that today's youth need versus what they needed in the 1930s and 40s long ago. So they're far out of date. In the next year, we want to do the same at Case and Park so that our science labs are fully modern and up to date for what our students need today. We're opening a new career technical education building for construction trades at Horlick. That's underway. It'll open in about 2 weeks. So it's kind of an outdoor building, and students who are taking construction classes or other kinds of career technical education classes, it's a place that looks just like it would look if you had a job doing that work. So they'll get a real life experience in taking their high school courses on what it would be to be a construction worker or a drafter or an architect, those kinds of things.
Beautiful.
And then we've got Case Track got refinished. We're putting HVAC heat and air conditioning at Gerstead Agar Home. We opened Real School, which is a whole other exciting thing, and we've got more classroom space and a lovely, better facility for our alternative learning students. So we've got a lot of great things in this budget that's in place for this year for our students.
Incredible. And that's even more than the article in the Racine Journal Times talked about.
Yeah.
And I think it's wonderful to have all of these modifications and changes and additions as far as our facilities are concerned. And when I think of technology, I think, you know, these kids are going to live in a technological world, and they need to have these skills.
That's right. So we're working fast to keep up with the times, and we certainly appreciate the community support of the referendum, which makes a lot of these facility innovations possible. And then we've gotten some wonderful grants and support from community partners like Emerson Foundation and many others that are helping us do lots of great things for students to get them ready for college or career when they graduate.
Wonderful. And I think the more that businesses and industries and so forth see what's going on, the more supportive that they will become. And so the future really looks great.
You know, we've had nothing but remarkable support and endorsement from our business community and from our community as a whole. I think there's never been a time, I don't know, if I've not been here forever, but I just believe that at this time, Racine Unified is enjoying the best partnership and collaborative work that we've ever been able to have with all of our businesses, our business community, with all of the other community leaders and all the organizations in Racine. It's really great.
And as Unified is successful in terms of educating its kids, then the community is successful. Business and industry are successful.
That's what I always say. Our destinies are completely intertwined. We cannot be a great district without a great community, and it can't be a great community without a great district. We have to partner and stick together, and we rise and fall together.
Right, and the resources are here given that referendum that was held, what, about 3 years ago?
Right.
How many more years does that have to go?
Well, it was a 15-year referendum,
oh,
so it's got
good.
A long time to go.
And, oh, that's wonderful.
It'll be amazing what will be here 10, 12 years from now.
Exactly. My, that is great. Let's talk a little bit about the real school, because I was really impressed with the pictures in the Racine Journal-Times talking about the real school, and you made the point there in your remarks that it will be tied to Gateway Technical College, and that's really a wonderful coup, I would think.
Yeah, you know, Racine, Dr. Albrecht and I went last year to a conference about four community college and technical colleges, and we were so proud. We're one of the few places in the United States to have such a great partnership with Gateway Technical College on many levels, but this most recent one is that we have built the Real School, which stands for Racine Engineering Arts and Leadership School, and it's right across the street from the IMET Center in Sturtevant, kind of near the movie theater, if you know where that is. And it's a school for grades 6 through 12, and students who, if they sign up for the engineering pathway that's there, they will be taking classes from our teachers who are trained to teach the kinds of courses Gateway teaches, and they'll be taking courses from Gateway teachers at Gateway, and they actually could graduate if they go through the whole 9th through 12th grade years in that pathway with over 20 college credits in their pocket, almost an associate's degree in IT. So that's really exciting, a wonderful opportunity. You know, the Real School has needed a home for some time. They started out as a tiny little alternative kind of school that was a charter school effort, and they've built it up over many years. And when we want to close now the O'Brown campus, we knew we needed to give them a place. And so they redefined their mission around manufacturing, technology, engineering, and IT, and keeping the arts in there because that's very important to their mission and leadership. And we've built them this school, and Gateway has been nothing but a great partner, another great partner that we have in Racine, to put together what's going to be a fabulous and very appealing program for students.
And what this strikes me as is a very efficient use of the resources that Gateway has and Racine Unified has, that they can be shared.
Absolutely. So we'll be using the classrooms over at IMET Center during the day. The IMET Center, is my understanding, most of the classes are late afternoon and evening, and they're pretty empty during the day. So our students will be there in the day, and then their students will be there in the evening using those same tools and equipment, which is very wise and smart.
Certainly. Wise use, then, of the taxpayers' money. Well, let's move on, then, and talk about this recent development. On Monday, August 28th, the Joint Finance Committee in the Wisconsin State Legislature included special requirements for the Racine Unified School District. Where did these requirements come from? Were there any hearings or previous indications that these proposals were forthcoming? And why Unified? I was reading somewhere in the paper the other day that Appleton had a four-year graduation rate of 50%, and I know Unified is much, much better.
Right. Well, you know that our board has been working, ever since I've been here, I've been working with the board to look at a handbook that's more compliant with Act 10, and there's a lot of debate about whether it is or not, but most generally, widely held belief is that our handbook is not compliant with that state law. And as the board has worked on that, our legislators have become increasingly concerned about the board not moving in the direction to make the changes that some legislators believe should be made. So that in August, we had brought, so the board's been working for over a year. They crafted a document called a guiding change document, which outlined for administration the kind of handbook that they would want and the way that they would want it to be. They asked us to put together a handbook based on the Wisconsin Association of School Boards model. They have a model of what a handbook should look like that's compliant with Act 10 that most of the other districts in Wisconsin used to write their handbooks. So we brought that handbook to the board through this summer and had it ready to go. We brought it to them in August and asked them to approve that handbook. And the board, as you may or may not know, voted to defer that vote until and directed administration to spend more time getting input from employees and from the employees' unions. So we've done that. But once the legislators saw again another delay, another deferral, their concern about whether or not the district was actually going to vote for an Act 10 compliant handbook was even elevated. We also know that over these past years, I know even when I came here, there's always been lots of talk about secession. Some of the municipalities closer to the interstate have talked often about pulling out of the district and creating their own district. So all these influences sort of came together right at this time for the budget amendment to include some law enforcement to, I believe, you know, convince the board to move rapidly toward adopting the handbook and improving our student achievement results.
Okay. So as I read the requirements of this Opportunity Schools Partnership Program, they depend on whether Racine Unified receives a one-star rating or fails to meet expectations for a second year in a row. Tell our listeners about the one-star rating from the 2015-16 school year. What was involved in this rating system? What brought that rating about for Unified? I assume it's a rating system used for all school districts in the state.
Yes, it is. So the state requires the Department of Public Instruction to rate all of its schools, and the Department of Public Instruction has used actually a different formula almost every year, certainly every year since I've been here. They've used a different test almost every year since I've been here. So the way that they calculate it is different almost every year.
Oh, yes.
And so 2 years ago, we were, as a district, rated meets few expectations, and really very close to being in the meets expectation category. And then last year, a different test was put in place for grades 3 through 8. And the way that the state calculated what that report card would look like changed dramatically. And the way that it changed actually impacted about a third of the districts in Wisconsin getting a lower score.
Oh, yes.
And we were one of those. Actually, our student achievement was not worse, and our student achievement is actually higher than some other districts who got a higher rating. But the way it's calculated, they calculate your scores, and the higher poverty you are, the less the achievement score counts, and the more the amount of what they call growth counts. So growth is how much progress did every child make through the year wherever they were. And so higher poverty school districts, that growth measure counts more than achievement. If you're low poverty district, then the achievement score counts more. So unfortunately, although our achievement was stronger, our growth was not. And our poverty is very high. So that really spun our scores into a not meeting expectations.
Well, achievement is higher to get. Growth is harder to get when achievement is higher.
It's a very complicated formula. I can't even begin to tell you some things like attendance. So attendance is part of the formula.
Uh-huh.
The problem is, for example, we had one elementary school that worked very hard this year to improve their attendance, and they made significant gains, but that won't even count until next year's report card because the attendance is the average of 3 years previous, not including the most recent year.
Oh.
So it's a very complicated formula. I could spend hours just talking about that. But the fact is that the new formula resulted in that, which the OSPP, the Opportunity Schools Partnership Program law, was put in place several years ago. And it includes Milwaukee, Racine, and Madison are the only school districts that would be eligible. It's my understanding that it was really meant to target Milwaukee Public Schools. It was put in place for Milwaukee Public Schools because they did have a failing report card under the old formula. They did not under this new formula. And but the work that was done to try to implement that was quite a mess, didn't work at all, and just kind of was abandoned. So that's the same, that OSPP, that is what's being in place for us now if we have a failing report card 2 years in a row, although the budget amendment says to delay it for 1 year, because I think our legislators do recognize the academies of Racine, the middle school work we're doing, the curriculum work we're doing. They know that change takes time, and so part of this budget amendment, if the board passes an Act 10 compliant handbook, the OSPP would be delayed for a year. So we would have another year, which is great.
Okay.
So, but it all, first of all, depends on the board's vote Monday night now on the 11th to adopt this handbook. If the board doesn't adopt a compliant handbook, I have to actually send the handbook to the governor's Department of Administration, and they have to review it and say that it is compliant with the law if the current handbook would not pass that. So if the board doesn't adopt a handbook that's compliant with the law, OSPP is not delayed for a year. It would happen this year if we have a failing report card. And we won't know that until late October.
Okay. And so this coming Monday night, then, the school board then will vote on the handbook.
They will. They have a special board meeting set up Monday night to vote on the handbook. It's always been a very close vote. The board's voted on this, I think, now three times since I've been superintendent. And it's always been a 5-4 vote to not pass it. So Monday night is a critical night for our community because if the board does not adopt this handbook that would be Act 10 compliant, the OSPP kicks in, which means that, and the OSPP really then allows another entity to come in and take over some of our schools. And at the same time, it's not OSPP, there's another provision called school district creation, which allows the municipalities to move forward with seceding. So both of those are in play if we don't have the handbook passed. So it's a critical night, Monday night.
I would say this is indeed complex. My next question was, as a result of the one-star rating in 2015-16, what did Unify do in 2016-17 to respond to those challenges? And I think we've gotten a good idea of that
You can't imagine. We really focused on making sure that the way the kids took the test was calm, supportive, positive, that we got our data right, because there have been some questions about whether we're giving the state the right information. We focused on attendance, and our parents out there, if you're listening, that's so important. Get our students to school every day. Our ACT test, that's the big measure of student achievement in high school. So our ACT scores, very important. You know, the state, it used to be only kids thinking about college would take ACT. Now all juniors are required to take the ACT. So that's a big push and is again this year. And then making sure that our freshmen pass algebra, you know, pass their English class so that they can, when they get up to the ACT grades, they're well academically prepared to do well.
So parents then can really be involved in terms of urging, getting their kids to school and that sort of thing. Students can be involved in terms of doing the best in terms of the tests that they have to
take,
etc.
And we offer lots of ACT, for high school, for example, lots of ACT prep support that helps students prepare to do their best on the ACT, and those are on Saturdays and after school. We need our juniors to be taking that. We need our after school programs in our elementary and middle schools, and even more this year. There was another article recently in the paper about we have 4 more schools with those kind of after school programs that focus on academics. So having your child stay after school and participate in that extra learning time in reading and math, all of that can really help.
And Kathy Dunkerson has all of these after school programs,
right.
And Unify just got some funds to promote that.
So
even
4 more schools. So almost all of our schools now have a really great after school program that has fun things, has snack, and it has extra practice in reading and math. So it has all of that. So it's not only just tutor time. It's also fun and engaging, and a snack and little time to play and blow off some steam, but then it's some extra work on reading and math. And so our family should be taking advantage of that.
So here's something then that parents can make sure that their children participate in that. And I know I have interviewed Kathy before, and she has indicated that students who participate in that program for a certain length of time during a school year have
better
test results and that sort of thing. Let's move on here, and unless there is a one-year delay in implementing the OSPP program for 2017-18, if Racine Unified received a one-star rating for 2016-17 school year, its second sequential one-star rating, then a series of actions can take place which ultimately would allow communities such as Caledonia or Mount Pleasant to vote on whether to form a separate school district. Tell our listeners about that. Now, there would be that delay, though, too, is built in there.
So it's important, I think, to make it clear. OSPP,
yes.
Opportunity School Partnership Program, is one piece, and that is allowing another entity, another group, the county executive would appoint somebody to separate some schools and take them over and just run them based on their performance. So that's been in place. That is right now being proposed to be delayed for 1 year. If we have a passing report card this fall, none of this happens.
Okay.
Except the Act 10 is still important. But the Opportunity School Partnership Program would not happen because that law says 2 years in a row, a failing school district. But right now the amendment is to say let's delay that for a year for Racine. So that's one. The other one is called a school district creation provision. That's a whole separate one. That's not OSPP. That's a separate provision that's been added. That's the brand new part that we didn't know about that came up very suddenly just a couple weeks ago, right after the board voted
with
to
no
defer.
With no hearing or anything.
No, right. It just was added to the budget amendment. And that puts in place local municipalities can, the elected governing, you know, the village boards, for example, can vote to pursue the idea of seceding. And then money is given to the Department of Public Instruction to help that municipality determine how much it would cost, what buildings they would get, what assets they would need, what the property taxes would be, all of that. Help them spend about 6 months looking into it and gathering the information about what that would all mean. And then the next year, and so that's 6 months of that, and public hearings, all of that would be going on. And then in the fall, the next fall in November, the community and that municipality would actually vote, did they want to move forward with seceding and establishing their own district or not. So that would all be going on. If the handbook is not compliant, that starts in November. If we have a failing report card, then that could start in November.
Okay, so there's
and
a second.
If we don't have a failing report card, that would not start. So it's all about the handbook being compliant first from the board. That's
yes.
The board's work. And then our work is, of course, to hopefully delay for a year. We've been asking the legislature to delay that secession piece for a year as well. Right now, I think they're less inclined to do that. So that's really the looming concern, mainly because can you imagine we're a school district under the gun to really improve our student results? Because we wouldn't want a third failing report card, right? So it would be all this pressure on we need to focus on reading and math achievement, on high school ACT scores, on our graduation rate, on attendance, all those things. But meanwhile, all the municipalities will be wanting to get information about property value and buildings and assets and property taxes. So where will our time and attention be over on that? Imagine we have teacher vacancies and we're trying to hire teachers, and all they read in the paper about Racine Unified is that big chunks of the community might withdraw. Who will come and teach here? You know, how will we fill our positions? How will we keep morale high? What parents considering moving here or some other community would move to Racine knowing that, well, it might not even be Racine Unified in a couple of years? So we're very concerned about the turmoil, the disruption, the stress, and the distraction, frankly, away from what we should be working on, which is creating the best school district we can for our kids.
And that second aspect that you mentioned then, Does that affect any other school district besides Racine and Fide?
No, that's just for Racine.
Somehow I think we're getting special treatment, quote, unquote, in terms of special in here, and that intrigues me and bothers me. Let us move on here. At this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you're listening to Education Matters on WGTD-HD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Today, I am visiting with Dr. Lolly Hawes, superintendent of the Racine Unified School District. Our program is focused on a variety of issues facing Racine Unified, including the requirements under the Opportunity Schools Partnership Program. Now back to our program. I was thinking, too, about the impact on the community. You talked about the impact on the school district in terms of attracting teachers and that sort of thing. And the impact on the community strikes me as being, who would want to bring their business to Racine if the school district's in chaos or whatever?
Yeah, I think it's potentially devastating for the city of Racine.
Yes.
The businesses, the property values, the schools, the children who live in the city of Racine. And it's unknown, but, we as a district, because we have a higher level of poverty and a lower level of assessed valuation for our property, we receive a tremendous amount of state aid, which
yes.
keeps our property taxes low. A wealthy district, which is means that they have higher property values and less poverty, receives very little. So the communities that would consider seceding from the district would, I believe, they would have to, first of all, pay for the buildings that they acquire and set up their own district, which would be very expensive. And there will be hardly any state aid, so property taxes will be significantly impacted for those communities in terms of going up. Right now, those wealthier communities, the more expensive homes, enjoy a lower property tax assessment because we also have lower income, lower value properties. But if you become a district of mostly high value properties, then you get almost no state aid. And so you're funding your school system without state aid, and that becomes a property tax expense. So there are a lot, and that's what that whole 6 months of secession investigation time would reveal, is what are the likely implications. But certainly the diversity of our school system would be affected.
Yes.
You know, in many ways, based on wealth and race and ethnicity. So because our communities are somewhat different in those regards too. So there's a lot of implications for moving forward with this. And again, it all really stems from making an Act 10 compliant handbook.
Yes.
And improving our student achievement, and asking the legislature to give us a minute here to continue to make the improvements that are underway.
Right. Okay. And one of the things that I've thought about in terms of all of this is I have two daughters who are graduates of Unified and a granddaughter who's a graduate of Unified. And it seems to me that because Unified was such a diverse school district, that they learned how to live in a diverse community. And so that's an advantage of Unified. That
yeah, we always say diversity is our biggest asset. We always say our diversity is our biggest asset as a school system.
I would agree with that. Yeah. You know, and my daughter, two daughters and my granddaughter, I think, are excellent examples of that. So if a new suburban Racine district is created, do you have any data indicating the percentage of minority students in the new Racine Unified and then the new suburban district? My sense is that Racine Unified, or what the new Racine Unified, would be largely much more diverse, many more minorities.
Right. I don't have actual data on that, but you're right. You know, we know that our city of Racine community is much more diverse and has a higher level of or a lower income, higher level of poverty than some of our suburban districts. But I don't have the exact data. But I think we all realize what that would look like in separate school districts based on municipalities.
Okay, so maybe we should talk a little bit about what can parents and students do If they wish to speak out on this particular issue or these issues that are facing Racine Unified now. Of course, next Monday night then is really important in terms of the handbook.
So I would say, sure, I think one thing you can do is reach out to your school board members and let them know how you feel about the urgency of passing the handbook that would be Act 10 compliant so that none of this can go into, you know, that's the first step.
Right.
Secondly, we've already talked about getting your kids to school, getting your, making sure you understand how important attendance is, making sure that, you know, you're taking advantage of ACT prep classes, that your students are taking advantage of the after-school programs and they're doing their homework every night, that you're communicating with your child's teacher to find out what you can do. As far as community, I know Schools of Hope continues to look for volunteers to tutor reading to our children in several of our elementary schools. Once a week, an hour a week, you can would like to tutor a child. Mentors, we need mentors for students in the middle school grades. We have a wonderful mentoring program for kids who don't have strong family or grandparent support in their own families. Sometimes a mentor can be that person. There are lots of ways that you can help. You can also reach out to your state legislators and let them know how you feel about these budget provisions being attached for secession. And encourage them to delay that secession opportunity for a year and to delay the OSPP takeover of schools for a year and recognize that we are making good progress. Our Academies of Racine, the middle school choice program that's opening next fall is very exciting. Every family will have five choices for a great middle school, whichever, you know, through a lottery process. Our elementary schools are better and better all the time with the reading and math curriculum that we have. So parents need to, you know, communicate how they feel about their schools, how they, you know, they need to get involved. They need to let their legislators know and their school board know what they believe should happen.
Excellent. Yes, that's a good summary of that. And I was just reading a little article about, was it Project Hope, the one, this is the reading tutoring program where the
Schools of Hope, yes.
Yes, and they're looking for tutors then to
right.
come in.
That's through the United Way. That's another great partner we have in the district. You know, several things United Way has. So if you have a child, and if anybody's listening or a grandchild out there who is not yet school age, you can sign up for the Dolly Parton reading program, which sends a book to your home every month for that child for 5 years. So at birth, you start getting a book a month free in the mail. And so by the time you start kindergarten at age five, you should have 60 books. A book a month for 12 months for 5 years gives every child a book in their home every month to look forward to in the mail for a parent to sit down and read with their child. They also have sponsored a partnership with our local pediatrician so that every child who's born gets a book from their pediatrician, and the pediatrician helps parents model how to read to their child to help them develop reading skills. And then Schools of Hope is sponsored by the United Way as well to put tutors in our schools for reading, to read with a child or one or two children an hour a week to help them improve their reading skills. And then United Way has also sponsored the mental health clinic and the community person that makes NAP school go. So we've had a great partner in United Way. Again, we just have so many great partners in Racine. And there's lots of ways that through the United Way, if you go to their website, lots of ways that you can donate. It's not very much. I don't know the exact amount. And then you can make sure to fund a child to get a book a month for 5 years. That donation goes a long way to making sure kids have all the preschool skills they need to come to school ready to learn.
And this Dolly Parton program, when did that start in Racine Unified, a year ago or so?
It's been in western Racine County for several years, and it just came to East Racine, to our district, last year, and we already it's growing leaps and bounds, but it's a great program that the United Way is sponsoring, and of course they're always looking for people to fund that, so people can donate directly to that effort, and that makes sure that every child has all these books in their home, because a lot of our families, some of us, I know my grandchildren have more books than I ever even saw as a child just in their home.
Yes.
And then there's other children who don't have a single book ever. that they get to read and don't even know how to open a book or turn the pages when they come to school. And those are the families we're trying to target with this program.
And this Dolly Parton program, parents can sign their children up as soon as they're born?
Right at birth, they get an application at the hospital.
Oh, does the hospital provide that?
Yeah, it's my understanding that that they are given the information about that right there when they start. But they can join anytime if they're 2 or 3 or 4 years old. Parents can also sign up for that. So that's another great program that you might want to talk to United Way about, Duane, and help our community know more about. It's an excellent program.
And I want to put a plug in here for a program that's going to take place at the Rondell on September 26th. I think it's 6:30 in the evening. Dr. Mm-hmm. Navsarian, an MD from UW-Madison, is going to be speaking on the importance of children's literature and children's learning. So that's it. So contact the Rondell about reservations for that particular program. So the medical profession even has a great sense for how important reading is for young children.
And that's unique. It's not unique to Racine, but Racine is one of the few out of the hundreds of thousands of communities in the country doing all these things. And that's just great. That tells what kind of community Racine really is.
Right. Okay. So maybe we've got just a few minutes left here, a couple minutes left. Can you maybe summarize then what the sort of the steps are here in terms of this legislation?
Sure. I'm going to get I have a little bit of notes here. I'll make sure I say it all correctly. So first of all, Monday night, the board, really imperative that they vote and approve a handbook that's Act 10 compliant. And then I have to send it forward as a superintendent to the Department of Administration, and they review it and say, yes, it's Act 10 compliant. Then we wait until then the legislature, of course, is going to be voting, and the governor will be signing the budget bill, which includes those provisions for OSPP being delayed for a year for Racine, regardless of our report card this fall, and kicking off this ability for municipalities to secede, which would be this year, starting in November. So that then the budget is passed, the governor signs it, if that all goes into law. Then at the end of October, we will know what our state report card is. And if we are not a failing school district, which I certainly hope, and we have lots of good indicators, our graduation rate is up, our achievement is up, so we have some good indicators that that might be the case, that we might not be a failing school district, quote unquote.
Great.
Then nothing really happens. If we have a failing school district and that whole budget amendment passes, then OSPP takeover of some schools is delayed a year, but the municipalities, by I think November 30th, they have to be notified that they have the right to vote on whether or not they want to pursue that. Then by January 30th, each village board says yes or no, we want to pursue secession. If they say yes, there's 6 months or so of DPI-funded investigation into what that would all cost and imply and mean, you know, lots of public hearings, all of that. And then the next year in November, there would be a referendum in that municipality, say it's Mount Pleasant or Caledonia or, you know, Wind Point or whatever. They would have a referendum for all the members in that community to vote, do you want to secede or not, based on all the information that you have. And if they vote yes, then that would start. If they vote no, then they wouldn't.
Then the whole thing's done.
Then the whole thing's done.
Okay.
That's pretty complicated, huh?
I would say, you know, you just hold your breath and just shake your head. To our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as I visited with Dr. Lolly Hawes, superintendent of the Racine Unified School District. Our program focused on current developments in Racine Unified, including the requirements under the Opportunity School Partnership Program. Thank you, Dr. Hawes, for this most informative program. We wish you well in your work in the Racine Unified School District. We wish the school board well, and particularly we wish you well as you lead the district and community in this current challenge. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Duane Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
The Gateway Radio Reading Service is for visually impaired listeners who'd like to have local newspapers and books read to them. In the Kenosha Racine area, specially tuned, easy-to-operate radios are available free of charge. Visit WGTD.org or dial 564-3870.
From the WGTD